Every single action that you have ever taken started as a thought. So when you change the way you think, you will change the way you act, and you will change the way you live. That is hyperconscious.
No matter what you're going through right now or ever have gone through, the only way your life changes is if you change first. That is what we are here to help you do.
A huge shout out to our friend and mentor, David Meltzer of the Playbook Podcast, for sponsoring this podcast. All right, everybody. So for those who do not know, this is the one and only Anthony Trucks. We have been lucky enough to see him speak on Brendon Burchard's stages twice, talking about identity and other things. We were lucky enough to interview him in the hotel room and go to In-N-Out Burger, and that was very nice. And
4x4.
Yes, 4x4. Flying Dutchman.
Flying Dutchman.
Besides being a former NFL player, an American Ninja Warrior, a consultant, a speaker, a coach, all of these things, a podcaster. At the end of the day, the one thing for me that stands out about Anthony is he's just a down-to-earth dude. When we were at the event, Influencer Academy, people were just coming up to him. He was stopping. Like, we literally waited 20 minutes so he could talk to people, and that's the man I aspire to be, so I definitely look up to you, Anthony. And I encourage questions throughout and or save them for the end, depending on what Anthony wants, but you are learning from somebody who knows a lot about this. He knows a lot about personal development. He's had some incredible experiences throughout his life, and he has overcome a lot of adversity to be the amazing guy he is today. So, Anthony, I will give you the floor, my friend.
Anthony, if you don't mind, I want to jump in and just give you a quick story, a little bit of an intro as well. So, Anthony Trucks, I met him, again, at Brendon Burchard's event in 2018. He was very, very kind to me. And after that event, I was going through a lot. And I messaged him on Facebook, and he audio messaged me back. We had a little dialogue. We actually got on the phone for a time. And for me, I was having a really hard time going back into an old environment after being transformed. If you've never been to a Brendon Burchard event, they're very well designed, and they're designed for real transformation. Mia, I know you're in here, and you were either at that event. Yeah, you were at that event. And so what he was saying is, like, when you transform and then go into an old environment, it's supposed to feel off for a little bit. And so Anthony's helped me with my identity and really shifting into who we've become today. The versions of Kevin and Alan that you guys see now is very different than 370 episodes ago. So thank you so much, Anthony, for being here. We appreciate you. And the floor is yours, my man.
Hey, man. I appreciate that. It's always, I get a lot of those stories, but I do life, and that's part of how I do life. And then I'm like, oh man, I did do that. And, like, I remember the messages, and I remember the conversations. And so, man, hey, thanks for having me. I am happy that you take advice and run with it, because this you have to stay in creative where people come to hear me talk, not because of anything I did, but what you did. So everybody else who's here, just so you know, that there's two types of people. There are those that do the work and those that watch them work. And there's a end of the quote says, I don't mind the audience. And so be a person that works and that's good to see you work. So, man, kudos to you. So let's get into this today. This is not about me. I'll tell you parts of my story so I can give you guys some anchoring points. But I'm here to teach more than I'm here to just tell stories. And I'm hoping that you guys ask questions and engage and dig deep. And anything you want to know, unpack. Like, that's kind of what we're here for. This is time where I want you to kind of just pull everything aside. And it's not another, like, I'm watching some training video and some guy wants to come here be cool and pitch a book at the end. Like, I got nothing to give you, nothing to sell you. This is literally just me. I'm going to give you some thoughts to hopefully shift the way you see things. I can give you a new trajectory to go towards. So I'm here in Boron, California with my family. We road tripped across the country, and I'm on the way home right now. And so this is like the last thing on the docket for the day. So we pulled off to a little spot that I don't even know if we're supposed to be doing this here. But we're doing it. So here's the thing. Today, if you're in a place where maybe you feel like I have a whole lot of ideas, I have no idea how to get them all done, I get overwhelmed, I feel like I have stagnation, I ever get to the point where I'm like, man, how does so-and-so do it? Or like, I know what I'm supposed to do, but I can't bring myself to get this thing done. And then I watch everybody else live my dream. Like, if you ever felt like that, then you're in the right place. And if you ever get to a point in, like, your life where you're like, man, I feel like I've reached the sheer capacity of my capabilities. And it's usually what we call like a ceiling, right? Like, man, there's nothing more. Like, how do I do more? How do I have more? And so for me, the whole thing I do is I teach people how to kind of expand who they are so they can be, do, and have more. Can be more of a person that they can do more things, that can have more at the end. Because I'm sure everybody here wants more. You came here because part of you wants something more. I don't know what exactly it is, but that's what you want. So let's get into this today. So there's a separation between the person you are and the person who is everything you want. And this is a sheer separation. I'll give you the logic of it. If you were the person to have all those things, you'd already have all those things. I don't know what it is for you. Maybe it's more money, it's more time, more freedom. Maybe it's the love of your life. Maybe you just want to have a cool hairdo. I don't care what it is. Like, at the end of the day, there's that person that has those things. And what happens typically is, like, there's this gap, but I call it an identity gap. The identity gap is the gap between who you are and how you operate on easy, like, just, I call it your CLO, your comprehensive low operation, and then your CPO, comprehensive peak operation. Comprehensive meaning my business, you have a business, my family, my health, and how I manage the moments in life I can't take back. As we talk about this today, I'm trying to get you to grasp the separation between how do I go from where I'm at shift to be the person who does the things that I honestly should be doing, but I struggle to do. And you think about it, I think part of the, one of the messages that Alan had put out, he says, you know, I was kind of talking back and forth, I was expressing how there's certain people who they do certain things to get up in the morning. Like, you know, we get up, man, should I write that email? Should I make that post? Should I make that call? Should I go out of my way to do X, Y, or Z? And I'm like, should I? And then what happens is we don't realize we actually have this decision-making tank. Over time, the tank depletes. That's why guys like Steve Jobs only wore black turtlenecks in the summertime probably too, right? Less decisions to make, which means when I go to work, I have a capacity to make the big decisions that create the Apple iPhone I'm sitting here talking to you on right now. The president, usually like Obama, had like two suits. Less decisions. The guy decided a whole lot of different stuff. And what happens is that tank is depleted. Now, a lot of people, they're always getting up like, should I? So by 12 o'clock, they're kaput. Like, I don't want to think anymore. I just want to watch some TV shows and eat some food. Or we get really good at scrolling through stuff because it takes our brain away. We don't have to experience that crazy. And then you have the person who's successful in the area you want to be successful. And they don't have to decide. They don't have to choose, do I get up and write the email? They just do it. I write the email. I get the workout in. I make those calls. I write that book when it's supposed to write the book. I go out and do the X, Y, and Z. And so by 12 o'clock, they still have a full tank or close to full. So they can go another 5-6 hours. What happens for a lot of us, we don't realize when we go kaput at 12 o'clock and somebody else, if they go 6 more hours, by the end of the year doing that, they've got 2 years on our 1 year. Does it make sense? So let that logic seep in. The logic is there's nothing wrong with any of you. Period, nothing wrong. You've just reached the peak of your operating system. And if you think about an operating system, what I'm saying is the people that do what they do, like they're just operating, they're flowing. Like a computer would flow. Like this phone I'm on right now has an operating software. And after a while, like I'll go to turn things on and it bogs down and it won't move and it gets frustrated, I'm pissed, right? Or my laptop gets a spinning wheel of death. What that is like all of a sudden the programs aren't able to do what they do because the operating system is not capable. So what happens is Apple says, hey, iOS 13.1.7.99,000, right? Okay, let me update. Now all of a sudden the phone runs faster. The computer has the updates of, you want to update this program or you want to snooze? A lot of us say, snooze, I don't want to do it right now. And it's the same in life. Like, you should be better in your relationship. Nah, I don't want to hear that right now. You should work out some more. Stop eating donuts. Nah, I'm going to snooze. I don't want to hear that right now. And when you eventually say, I'm not going to snooze it, and I select it and I actually do the updates, then I can operate smoother. And so the idea is I want to talk to you guys today about how do you upgrade that operating system? How do you get to the point where you do these things that are hard with ease? And how do you actually get to the point to where you're flowing? I know it's a gut thing. You're flowing at a good tick and you actually update yourself. That's the whole thing. It's like, how do we update the software I'm talking about, which is your identity? It's not your mindset, part of it, but it's not only your mindset, but it really, it's a base of like how you flow as a core. So here's what I want you to think about. Our goal today is to understand what's called your ideal identity. We're going to shift to this comprehensive peak. It's got to be like, what's your ideal identity? Who is the perfect identity for you to be in the dream you want to have? It's going to be comprised of 6 core areas that are Venn diagrams. So if you have paper, you're going to want to make a Venn diagram real quick. You can go ahead and do that real quick while I talk about it. We're going to have 6 areas. So you have the circle on top, bottom right, bottom left. You can have little bubbles that overlap in between, right? That's your Venn diagram. In the center of that bad boy, bing, that's going to be your ideal identity. And we're going to talk to you today about what these things are, and you're going to have to spend some time on your own crafting, like, what are the things that make this identity come to life for me? So here's the top part of that ideal identity. It's called beliefs. The beliefs area is literally the core beliefs that are rooted in you to where you'll fight for them. Like, what is the belief? So if I'm going to be an actor, and I'm going to do a movie, I better believe that I'm the dopest actor for this position, right? Or if I'm going to be, I'm going to be a great parent. I got to believe I'm going to be the best parent in the world. I'm going to be a great, you know, coach. I got to believe that, right? What are the beliefs that your ideal identity has to have? And believe me, they're different. Believe me, you get it. It's different. Mm-hmm. The beliefs I have to have as a dad are different than my wife as a mom, vastly. Like, I'm more of the authoritarian. She's more of like, I got to be the nurturer, which is super frustrating half the time. That's the reality of it, right? Now, bottom right, you have what's called thoughts. The thoughts are the things that are consistently running in the background. What is running in your head whenever you get to the point of having conversations, even if you don't know you're having a conversation, but it's happening. Left side of that's going to be actions. What are the big actions you must take to move the needle? And I guarantee if I sat with any of you guys for any period of time, I could find out one big action you've been one or should have taken or know you should have taken for like the last 6 months to a year. But for some reason, you can't get yourself to make that ask or do that thing or step out or launch whatever that thing is. And then lo and behold, you wonder, man, why don't I have the success I want? Well, the person who has the success you want, the things you struggle with, it's not even a blip on the radar. Those are the three main. Now, when they overlap between beliefs and thoughts, you have what's called mindset. This is what everybody knows about. Your mindset is this aspect of you who, it's like, where is the thoughts whenever you want to like, push forward? So think about it. If I believe I'm supposed to do something, but then I question myself, like, what are they going to think? Should I do this? Am I good enough? What if it goes wrong? What if I lose money? What if I make money? What if it goes amazing, right? If my beliefs and mindsets don't go in tune, my beliefs and thoughts, mindset goes out of whack. If your mindset goes out of whack, it's hard to operate. Now, then some people will say, man, I got great beliefs and I think great thoughts and I'm amazing. But there are a lot of people I know who have a phenomenal mindset who are dead broke. I know a lot of people that are dead broke. Everybody know anybody that's like, oh, they're powerful, they're amazing, but they're dead broke. Like, that's where I was. And I don't know how many of you guys just realized. I haven't even told do you guys know my personal story? I'm just a guy that Alan and them told to come on.
Please tell your story, Anthony. It's powerful.
I'll tell my – so let me finish this little piece, and I'm going to come back and show you how in the hell this even makes sense and why it's what I teach. So then you have what's the area between beliefs and – sorry – thoughts and actions, which is a big one. It's your habits. We have big actions, but you also have the small, consistent, arduous, tedious habits that a lot of people, they know they should do, but don't do. Like, we know we should have a morning routine, but no one has a morning routine. They do it for a week or two and it falls apart. I know I should exercise. I know I should think, do thinking time. I know I should read a book or two. I know I should X, Y, and Z. And for some reason, I keep saying, I don't know when to do it because I got this and I got this. So the habits suck. I fall out of whack. Then you have the one that's the most important one to me that I believe shows up in the moments when you need it to show up, which is between beliefs and I don't know if you're hearing, I got the wind going, so if the microphone issue is going on, it's probably me and these kids over here that just don't have the ability to be quiet. So what you have is between beliefs and actions is your ego / your pride. Now, this is the thing that a lot of people don't grasp. This is tied to my story, which is a perfect lead-in. You must have a creepy, humongous, like Mount Everest-sized chip on your shoulder in a positive way in order to take the actions in the moments you need to take the actions, to fight for yourself, to fend for yourself, to stand up and take that job, to make the ask, to say, like, you should buy this from me because I'm the person for it. And there's a way that I learned this. So if we go back to my story, which will lead into how this all ties together. When I was 3 years old, I was given away into foster care. My mom literally was like, I don't care about you or your three siblings. So me and my three siblings, that kicked off into a system that beat us and starved us and tortured us. Man, really hated stuff between the ages of like 3 to 6. And then at 6 years old, I got put into a family, which is my family now. Unique thing is I'm the only black person in an all-white family. We grew up really poor. So with this societal thing going on, I have some interesting dynamics that spin around all of it, having grown up in one environment while looking like somebody else, if that makes sense. And so like my identity has always been this thing I didn't really have a grasp around. So for the next 8 years, from 6 to 14, I lived in this household, but I didn't have the ability to live like fully. My real mom had what's called parental rights. She could tell me what I couldn't do, even though she didn't live in the house, which was really heinous because she wasn't the best person, to be honest. She wasn't a very good human. And so it wasn't until I was 14 I stood up in front of a judge in front of her and severed her rights, I could be adopted for the first time. The first time at 14, I knew the place that I woke up and I will go to sleep in that same place. It was a really interesting feeling because for me, I could never known that. Like, till 14, never knew it. My son's 15. And this kid, like, he's worried about what car he's going to get. I was, like, worried about where I want to sleep. It's a whole different world and dynamic, man. So, fortunately, I get to play football and do this thing. And you guys have all done this before. You try something that is something that you're excited about because you saw it. It was like, I want to do that. I want to play the guitar. I want to do this thing. I want to – whatever it is. I want to speak. I want to do live. I want to share. I want to write a book. And you start doing it, you're like, oh, I suck at this. I am not very good at this thing. And that's how I felt for football. And that's the normal experience, but here's the problem with a lot of people and their identity, where this little ego chip comes in, is they go into it, it's a 10 of pain. 1 to 10, like 0 to 10, it sucks. They're like, I don't want to feel that again. I am not going to do that again. I'm going to go disappear and do something else. So they do. And they do the same thing over and over again. A lot of us have been in that boat where we tried something, weren't great, tried something else, weren't great. We bounce and bounce and bounce around. And for me, I thankfully, the second year of trying football, after I gave up, I literally chalked it all up. I was like, it's 2 years of football. I'm in high school now. I feel like I'm a leaf in the wind. My mom got diagnosed with MS. My brother went to the military, so it's me hanging out. It just was weird. And this girl says to another girl, something that gives me a unique perspective on my situation. She says, well, the reason I'm so bad is because I'm in foster care. And it's not that it was a crazy statement. Like, and if you hear it, it's like, okay, right? But here's the unique gift it was to me. And I promise you guys have not been given this gift yet. You might give it to yourself. She said out loud the excuse I was giving myself for quitting, and it sounded stupid. Like, there's people who literally, I was like, I want to go to the gym today, but I couldn't find my shoes. That's a stupid excuse. You know what I mean? Like, that's dumb. Or I made this video, but somebody said a mean thing. So, like, you know, like, it's these things that we say them out loud as this truck goes by. You start to hear, like, man, it's not a very good excuse. And so for me, like, it ate me up at 15 years old. It's like, I gotta change something. I gotta do something different. And I chose to be great. And what I did is, here's the unique thing. You write nothing down from my time today. You write this down. What you create creates you. This is big. That's the foundation of all my work. Like, that's the root of what it is that I do. Just, you know, like, when it comes to the actual part, what you create creates you. So what I did at 15 years old, said, I want to be great. And I'm going to go back. What I started doing was all the hard things that I didn't want to do. All the things that seemed like, man, what does a great football player do? Football was my goal. And they did these things. And I'm like, that is a lot. Let's try it. And I started leaning into it. I started doing the work before I knew I'd be successful. And so I was every day in my back, throwing a football in the air, 500 reps, I had to catch it. I was running all the routes I could, lifting all the weights I could, eating everything at the damn house. Like, I was doing everything that I thought a great football player does. And I showed up the next year a different human. This is where I'm always trying to get my clients to get to. Here's what it is. When I got to the next year, like, I wasn't just like, I catch football, or man, like, I can run fast. It was this, you didn't have the right to take this from me. Like, I did all the, you don't get to stop me from catching this ball. You are not going to catch this on me. You don't get to tackle me. And I'm tackling you every time you come near me. Like, there's this different sense of, like, I've owned this. So I talk about that ego and pride. That's what you have to build, because it's not something where, like, I sit here and I feel good, like, I'm going to do it. It's in that moment when I just got beat. Do I get back up and I'm hungry to beat this person, or do I tuck away? If I get told something that doesn't make me feel good, do I take that 10 and, like, chalk it up and walk away? And here's what took place. In the beginning, that 10's a 10, but then you learn something from this pain you had, and you try it again. This is what I did. Try it again. It's a 9. Still hurts, but it's still a little bit less. Then it becomes an 8 and a 7 and a 6. And eventually what happens when I go back out, when you go back out to do the thing you do, it goes to 0. But 0 isn't this absence of pain. What it is, it's an inclusion of joy. The thing you hated doing that was scary in the beginning, it goes to the point where, like, damn it, this I find joy in doing. And not only do you find joy in doing it, it's who you are to do this thing. That's the key that you guys got to grab. It's when it gets to the point where it's who you are to do it, there are no more decisions. The tank doesn't get depleted. You just show up and do stuff. And somebody one day walks up to you and goes, man, Evan, how in the world do you do that? And you go, it's just who I am. It's what I do. I call it pinky finger power. When I was doing Ninja Warrior, this is a good one. I found this out in Ninja Warrior, which I don't know if you guys know I did that. I played in the NFL. Did an American Ninja Warrior. I'm three times city qualifier. First former NFL athlete to hit a buzzer on the show. And my sons over here, listen, they're all eavesdropping. And so pinky finger power is this. Like, your hand, most people don't realize, but the grip strength we have is actually in the pinky side. And it's this small, insignificant part of our hand that's incredibly strong. And so the pinky finger power becomes a standard. When you do it for so long, it's who you are. It's the strongest part, but it feels insignificant. So the part that you guys have of you as a human and how you show up, you have a pinky finger power somewhere that you think is insignificant, but that somebody else is the strongest part of you. Like, it's the part of you that people are like, how does Emily do that? How does Jacob do that? Like, it's so incredible. It's so amazing. Like, there's a part of you that just seems simple. And it's kind of a thing where you probably heard before, in a topic that you're an expert in, you have forgotten more than most people will know in their entire life. And when you can lean back into that part of your pinky finger power because you developed it by facing that thing again and again, making a 10 to a 9 to an 8 to a 7 to a 0 to a joy, then it becomes normalcy for you to do these things. Then it becomes easier for you to operate. Right? So that's the key for the work. So here's going to be part of the stages. I'm going to give you guys two things here in a moment. One's going to be the operating system, which is how your brains operate. We talked about operating system before. This is like how you're actually operating. And then I'm going to talk to you about the shift method I use as to how do you close these gaps. How do you shift to the next person, the next level? That's what we're really here for, right? We're, hey, I got the stuff, okay, Ant. It all sounds good, cool ideas. How do I make that real, right? Here's how you do it. First thing is this. We all operate in this process. I call it the self-mastery loop. Think of a circle. I have my computer, I could show it to you, but it's a circle. At the top of the circle, you have your identity. You can make, if you want to make seven circles, you can make seven circles. They go in a circle all around. Seven circles that make a circle. You get it. You get it, cut it with two E's. So at this circle, it goes in a circle. What happens is the beginning we have is called our identity. It's who we are. It's who you, if I was to ask, who are you right now? You'd be like, this is who I am. And you could rattle it off. Quick little neuroscience sidetrack. We actually identity-wise operate what's called the DMN in our brain, the default mode network. And if I ask you who you are, that part shuts off. You have a conscious thought of things you've done. When the reality is, when you're daydreaming about things you like and what would be great and what you see, that's actually who you are. So here's the crazy part. You are who you are when you're not thinking about who you are. Weird. Let that one sit in your brain for a little bit. So coming on back now. Here's the top of this. Identity. Who you are is what you see. That leads you to have certain beliefs about the world and about yourself and about what's possible for you in this world. So if I believe, if I, my identity is I'm a poor, you know, I'm a poor black kid. I had beliefs that are like, this is what a poor little black kid does. This doesn't have very much, right? The beliefs you have lead to the thoughts that you have. The thoughts that are running and spinning all day long of like, if I believe I'm not supposed to have much, my thoughts are, man, it'd be nice to have that bike, but I can't afford that bike. Like when I was a kid, when I was in sixth grade, I had these Nike Cortez and I would have to lace them up on the sides. My toe would come out with paper clips because we couldn't afford much. Like, but that wasn't, it was normalcy to me, right? Just like even normalcy to you. So you have these certain beliefs that lead to thoughts and you'd be like, man, I wish I could have new shoes. These thoughts we have, they lead to feelings. Now the feelings that we have create our actions. So I have these, the beliefs that lead to my thoughts, I have these feelings. Feelings create actions. So for me as a little kid, I was pissed at all the things everybody else had. I was a klepto, man. I used to steal stuff. I stole X-Men cards. I was still others. I stole the mouse ball in sixth grade from the computer room. And so the rest of the year, no one else got to use the computers. I didn't tell my friends it was me until I was like 30 years old. This is crazy. But this is what happens. I had these actions that took place. And here's the crazy part. The actions you take create your outcomes in life. Business relationship, they create your outcomes. The outcomes that you have, those create your environment. Your environment's big. It's an internal environment. Who am I inside? And an external environment. What am I living in? Nice house, nice car, nice body, right? And that environment tells you who you are. When you look in the mirror, you're seeing your identity, right? So my environment tells me that, man, you messed up, you missed that workout, or you didn't do something about that before, or you saw that person, you didn't help them out. Like, ah, you look in the mirror and you don't like yourself very much, right? So what happens is all day, it's what it is, my identity gets anchored in because the environment, so that's who I am again. And the cycle spins and spins. And for a lot of us, we're wondering, like, why do I even do hard work? What's the purpose of it? I don't even know if I'm going to win. I don't know how it's going to work out. There's always what's called the hero's two journeys. One is the achievement. One's the transformation. And the transformation, when it's dialed in, like it takes care of the achievements. And I'm going to talk this loop real through for you real quick about how the transformation is clearly more important. Think about like Mighty Ducks. You're going to see Mighty Ducks back in the day. Like they're all going to, you know, score pucks and goals and hockey stuff. Canadians, you guys get it, eh? But at the end of the movie, the cool part, it's like, yeah, they got the thing, but it's like, yeah, but Emilio Estevez got the girl, and they got like the stepkid, and like all the kids are more confident. And the girl's like, she's beautiful, and she loves herself, right? Like, that's the real end result. And the achievement kind of took place along the goal transformation. And so the part was the hard process of doing the work. So here's what I want to lend you this thought as to why hard work is the most important part of all this and where it ties in. So all of this loop, we have to take this self-mash loop and spin it somewhere. It's got to go somewhere. Because right now, a lot of us spin in place. We do a lot of work, and we get nowhere. We do a lot of work, and we get nowhere. It's like, why am I, wow, what's going on? And what happens is you're doing all the hard work that you either know how to do or you feel comfortable doing. And the work that's outside your comfort zone hasn't been done yet. And you don't always, in your heart of hearts, know why. And here's how you do it. I can't honestly change your outcomes without an action changing. I can't change your self-belief that you're doing something. Even if you say, I believe, and affirm all day, there's a part of your brain that knows, like, I don't know if you should. Like, Jay, should you? I don't know, man. Like, it's just, and so you don't really operate a full sense of just, oh, you know what I'm talking about. And then it's like hard to change your thoughts. I can have you affirm, but it's hard to change like what you're thinking because it's fueled by beliefs. But here's where it takes place. Has anybody at any point in your life, you ever like been like at a, I don't know, you want to jump off a cliff somewhere into the water, like at some beach area, like some camping thing? I'm sure somebody's done it, right? When you first get to that cliff, it's like, oh, I don't want to do this. Like, I, you know, the identity is like, I'm not the guy that does this. My belief is like, you're going to die doing this. You're like, I'm like, stupid, don't do this. And the feelings are like, oh, I don't want to do it. So sometimes like, we won't even do it right against that point. Well, the people who are the ones that go up there, they say, forget what I'm thinking. They just, they jump out, they land in the water. And they're like, oh my gosh, this, the rush is amazing. Like the water's cold, but I'm looking up and I accomplished it. I get this different outcome. And the outcome creates a different environment inside. And I look at the environment outside of me differently. It starts to lease the dirt of my identity. I have a different belief, like maybe I could do something different. Maybe I dumped it, maybe I do a backflip or a belly flop or spin, right? And then it goes to these different thoughts I have what I can do. And then I feel like a little more amped and I go do it again and again. And next thing I know, I was at first scared. Now I'm doing backflips and people are cheering for me, right? The simple way of thinking about it, what happens is whenever you get to the point of taking that step, you have to do it by separating the thoughts you're having. It's taking that unconfident action. That's really what you have to do, is step into space that actually you're supposed to take the big one. It changes the programming more than you know. Because now you go in and go, oh, well, maybe I can do this. And it loosens it. And if you've ever been in a place of wondering how do I and why do I, this is exactly how it ends up working for people. And so you have to find out what those actions are that scare you. And there's a guy, Todd Herman, and I love his work on alter egos. It's like, he's like, activate an alter ego that shows up for yourself in a moment to do what you got to do. You know, Kobe had the Mamba, Beyonce had Sasha Fierce. I had the truck stop, like in football, like you have these different identities that just, they show up. Right. But that at certain point that identity goes back to sleep, right? And it tucks away. Well, who's running that wheel the whole time? His work. I think that my work married perfectly what he does. Because what I'm going to tell you to do is in those moments, you're like, I got to do this thing. And every part of your soul feels like not doing it. Like, I don't want to cold call. I don't want to reach out. I don't want to send this message. I don't want to do a live. I don't want to post this video because it doesn't look as good as AKs. It doesn't look as good as Aaron's. Like, what do I? And you don't do it. Now it takes place. You tuck away and you watch everybody else live your dream. And here's what takes place. That chip I talked about earlier gets smaller and smaller and smaller to the point of, like, you start losing a little bit of love and respect for yourself. And if you think about a person external from you that you don't love or respect, do you really show up to that person in the hard times? Like, if I don't love the person or respect the person across the street and they need something, like, I'm not going to go out my way to help that person. Like, it's not going to happen. Somebody's making noise. We got a baby in town. It's okay. Baby time. I got three of these things over here. We're good. So the thing is, whenever I don't show up to those actions, that little love pocket and that chip gets smaller and smaller. And so now what happens is I don't show up for me. And when you know you take the action, not only is it bad to not take because you miss out on the opportunity, you actually pull yourself farther and farther back, and the hill to climb is much bigger for you. So this, when I talk about the self-mastery loop we're talking about, you really got to realize that the things you're going to have to do are going to be the moments of doing something when you do not want to do it, and you shut down the part of your brain that's talking to you negatively, activate the alter ego or your secret self, I call it, and let that person show up boldly and go in and take that punch. Like, I played sports. It's kind of like the coach and the player. When I was out in the field playing the game, I was playing the game. The worst thing for me would have been having a coach in my ear yelling at me the whole time I'm playing. Turn left, look there, right here. But I'm like, I'd be all over the place. And a lot of us, what we're doing is we're playing the game of life. We're bringing a coach onto the field, and it's muddying up the waters. Because I'm in the middle of talking, questioning myself, thinking, should I have said that? What should I do? And I lose train of thought, and then I feel bad because I messed up, and it goes back, and it reinforces a negative part of your brain that didn't need to be there. So I tell people is, leave the coach on the sidelines, the judgmental part of you that wants to analyze every word you say and every step you're doing, leave them on the sideline. Go play the game. Come back off the field after making a mistake or two. Talk to your coach. Go back out in the field. And the more you do this, eventually the coach is like, hey, killing it. Look at that person out there getting like, hey, great job, Zach. They're cheering up on the sidelines. And if you can put the coach on the sideline and show up with your secret self onto the field of play, you'll find it first to 10. Then it's a 9, then it's an 8. And whatever it is your major goal, it becomes a joy piece for you. We getting this? We making sense so far? We're about to go into the kind of the back end of this whole thing, and then we'll do a Q&A.
Fine.
So here is the thing that this has all been concept, and I'm giving you guys information. Here is the way you actually put this into real life. There's three stages. It's like my core work. It's my proprietary process. It's what all my stuff's built on. It's called the shift method. Three stages with 9 steps in between. Kind of 10, but you gauge for yourself. See, shift, sustain. Shift method, that's all it is. See, shift, sustain. Is how it works. The first part of it, you have to accept that you got something to work. The see phase is like, I got to see what work I have to do. There's a lot of people in life that they'll say, okay, I need to be better. And what do? We just start doing things. I start reading the books. I start having the conversation. I start going to these things. I start doing this work. And then what we do is we get to a point where my pastor says one time, I loved how he said it. He said, A lot of people do this work and they start huffing and puffing, climbing a ladder, get to the top of the ladder and realize, oh, I leaned against the wrong building. I don't want this. This is like, this sucks. So we're like, it just killed me. Like, I feel like lackluster. It looked good, but like, this is, man, and I didn't even get where I wanted to get to. I got up here like, because they never looked at the beginning in the C phase that I go through and said, what work should I really be doing? What work needs to be done that I'm unaware of or don't want to own up to that sucks? I ended my story earlier, like, you know, high school, but I went into college, had my first son at 20 years old. My fiance at the time, you know, met my real dad at 21, came out of college, went into the NFL, played for 3 years. NFL stands for not for long, NFL. And then I got done and I went to the real world and opened a gym. And within the first 9 months, it was bankrupt. My marriage fell apart, family fell apart, everything fell apart, out of shape. I wanted to take my life quite literally, like go box one night. Had some really tough, dark times. And then in 2014, my mom passed away. It really lit me up of like, I got to figure out what all this is about. Like, what's all this craziness? Who am I? It's an identity thing. Who am I? How do I show up for this world? How does any of this make sense? And so through a process of trying to figure out Anthony, I did a lot of the downloading, like the upgrade of a software, but this fee shifts and things. The downloading was like, what did I mess up? Like this family here, the woman you see here in the red shirt doesn't want to be on camera, I'm sure. But like, this was my wife. We got a divorce for 3 years and it was crazy. We had custody battle, all that craziness. And a lot of it was because of the way that we were communicating, well, whose blame was what. And it took me having to accept a lot of things about me to download like, Anthony, you suck as a husband, man. You were not there as a father either. You didn't take care of things and it fell apart. That was some of the hardest downloading I had to do to see what needed to be worked on. Because I could have easily went and started showing up as a dad and saying things and trying to be a better guy. But like, if I didn't really peek back and say, ah, you messed up there, man. Like I could have really done the right work. I would have wasted my time doing some work that wasn't the right work, right? This happens in business, but my business was always up and down. Could never figure it out. I didn't want to admit, like, I didn't know what I was doing. I'm Anthony Trump, former NFL guy. I got it, right? Ego popped in. Everyone's greatest obstacle, E-G-O. And so now it took place. I could download and see what had to be done for Ant. And then I could now do the work. So it's accept there's something to work on, dissect what the problem is. It's a big thing. Once you accept it, dissect it. What's going on? Why is this going on? Okay, and usually the things that will move the needle for you come with pain of acceptance. You didn't do this. Should have done this. You should have let that person do that to you. You should have stuck around the relationship that long. Accept it. Dissect why it took place. I got to work on that. Then what it does, it frees you up because you've given yourself permission to improve. Once you accept, you give yourself permission to improve, and it's powerful. Now I can go to the last part, which is discovery. And discovery for me is awesome. It's like discovering where it is that you want to go. I call it dreaming at full speed. We're out here driving these roads. Literally, I'm in the middle of a road trip. We woke up this morning in, I think it was Arizona, New Mexico. We're going to make our way to the Bay Area, California. We started in California, went to Florida, and we're making our way back. And these roads were like, you just open. Now we're in a big Chevy van, but picture we're in like this amazing cherry red drop top Ferrari, we'll call it. And the pedals on the floor, you got that heart pumping, like I'm moving, like you feel good. And it's like, oh, that's how dreams feel. Like dreams feel like, I got this idea. I can make this, do this. I'm going to create this, have a big event. Like, and then I start saying, oh, but what? I don't have enough money. But nobody knows me. What if I mess it up? Is my mom going to be okay with this? How's my husband going to take it? What if my wife says something? My kids aren't going to respect it. Right? We start putting speed bumps on the road. If that Ferrari was going down and hit a speed bump, slow down, go over, like, oh, it sucks. And that's what we do for ourselves. And so once you've got rid of the hitches of what's been stopping you, now you have freedom because you're like, I got control. I'm not helpless or hopeless anymore. I can control this. I can now start dreaming at a full speed, which means like, what would I do if I couldn't fail? Because once you go through the process of, like, I'm not going to go deep in this failure concept, but like failure has levels. And every failure you think has been a failure has been an amazing gift you haven't opened. You haven't opened yet. There's an unpacked failure gift sitting in your back of your head. When you unpack that, man, it opens up doors. Now I can dream at full speed. And now that you know where to go, now you do the shift work. The shift is the big piece of this. Now here's four stages of the shift. It's the last, like the segments that matter. Design, develop, deploy, debrief. Write these down. Design, develop, deploy, debrief. So when it comes to me saying, I want to go after this dream, we've talked about earlier, it's not who are you trying to do this thing? It's who are you trying to become that has these things, that does these things? Who am I? So what you do is you design your ideal identity. We talked about it already. This is where you actually go in and say, what are the beliefs that I got to have? I got to have this. I got to believe this. I need to believe this. Not what do you believe now? What do you need to believe to the core of you? Like where someone would be like, you are loopy, Looney Tunes that you believe that. Like, what is that thing? You write that down, right? What are the thoughts that need to run in my head? What affirmations do I have to say? What conversation should I be having? What questions should I be asking, right? What actions, what big actions do I need to take? What consistent habitual actions do I need to take? What mindset do I need to have that I can actually program and tune? And there's another segment of how mindset works. You guys have heard of fixed versus growth. We'll leave it at that. Fixed mindset, growth mindset, use that. I have another model I use, but just the basics for now and time. Just you got to have a mindset that's operational for you. And then what happens, once you design it, say, okay, great. How do I get to the point of what I create creates me? What actions do I do to bring this all to life? There's certain habits I must take into my life, certain actions I must take to be big. Because the action builds that confidence, builds the ego, builds that pride, right? The thoughts I have make, they get dialed in better. The loop starts going good in the self-mastery loop. So what happens is after a while, like, okay, I got these actions. These are the ones I should take. I plan it. Now, here's what takes place for a lot of people. We get vision boards. We plan stuff out amazingly. And then we like a month later, like, what happened to the vision board? Where did it go? Like, I don't, right? We don't do anything. Here's why. Because what happens is we get to that point of like the bottom in between that loop, right? The action, the feelings of like, oh, I'm supposed to do this, but I don't know if I, oh, we step back from the cliff. It never takes place. So what you have to do is deploy yourself into the world. Literally like Mo, you got to deploy yourself into the world, my lady. Like you got to go and go hard. Because what happens is here's the ideal identity. I plan the step you're going to do. Now I deploy to the world. Don't deploy. Hold on. Oh, perfect timing. Hold on. We're going to let that all happen. One, two, three. You got to time them out. I don't know if that's great. So you gotta, that's a truck stop. Maybe. I don't know why they do it. My son's yelling at me. Yes, really.
It's going to make for a fire episode on iTunes.
Fire. You better take it out and use it as like a sound effect. So now what you get to is the last part, which is going to be deployed. We deploy ourselves into the world. We take the action. And here's what takes place. A lot of us have a plan. It's great. I know what I want to do. Here's a plan. I do it. And then we go, oh, that sucked. I mean, it was football back in the day. I've had it in speaking too and coaching, all this stuff. You go out, you're like, oh, it felt bad. And I don't want to subject myself to pain again. A lot of us don't want to feel it. We just don't want to feel it again. So what we do is we come back and we slow roll it and we don't debrief. The debrief is huge because a debrief tells you how to make it a 10 to a 9 or 9 to an 8. So we go out, we do it, it hurts, it sucks, we just disappear, we tuck away, we eat our ice cream, we go do something else. We don't realize the most golden, juicy part of that whole experience is sitting right there to make it a 10 to a 9. So you got to go in the moments of hitting your face against the wall and say, what went wrong? What did I? Okay, now I go back and I redesign. What must I do? Maybe or don't redesign. Redevelop a plan, redeploy it, and I come back and debrief. And this is the process that I go through, everybody, over and over and over again, week by week, by week, by week, by week. So what happened at the end of it, the thing in the beginning of the week you were struggling on doing, or beginning of like the 12 weeks we go through, at the end of it, you're like, oh, wait, I'm not trying to do that anymore. Like, that's who I am. Like, I'm the person who I make these calls now. Like, that's odd. I remember, why did I even like, not do this before? I'm the person that gets up in front of a stage or does the live stream videos. I'm the person that writes those books. That's who I am now because I did the work, because what you create creates you. And here's why what you create creates you. It's a dirty, ugly process. Creation, if you think about it, is hard. Creating this relationship I have right now is hard. Every day in the car here, it's hard. It's just real life, right? If you, Michelangelo, you know, chiseling away with Dave, whatever it is, or maybe the Sistine Chapel, one or two, like the things they create, like it's a hard process. And at the end of that, you're not going to spend, you know, 10,000 hours chiseling a sculpture and say, but I'm not a sculptor. No, I'm a sculptor. You know what I mean? Like there's a difference to it.
Right.
And it's that process I just laid out for you that gets you to the point of like, at the end, that's who you are now. And so you've got to design your ideal identity. You have to go and say, what's the plan I'm going to put in place, develop, put in place? When am I going to deploy to the world? And when every week ends, what can I debrief from what took place and have the cycle go again? Think it through. And after a while, you'll find like it becomes normalcy and easy. It's now who you are, do those things. You don't even think about it anymore. Like it's second nature. I call it success becomes your second nature. You just do these things. Because you guys know there's people in the world. For some reason, everything they touch turns to gold. The Midas touch. Why is it ever? How come every time Susan gets this thing, man, Susan kills it? What is it about Susan? It's not the information. We all have the information. It's not the tools. We all got those, right? It's who is the technician? Who is the person behind the scenes? What's your identity running? And the last piece of it is your last part, sustain. Part of your identity, it's like, how do I sustain the growth I'm going towards and this person is in place? Three levels of that. It's drive, hive, thrive. Drive. Am I driving in the right direction? Some people have success, and for some reason, they wake up and they made a U-turn. My mother-in-law decided to come in to the thing. The client heard. No, I don't guess my mother-in-law. Okay. So make sure I'm going the right direction. Am I driving? Am I not making a U-turn going back to old habits, old ways? Check in with myself. Drive. Am I still driven for this thing? I may have accomplished it, but let's be honest. Some people get to a point of having great success. They're like, man, I had the success, but I want something more. And we think there's something wrong with that. And there's not. It just means you want to go to a new level, right? So are you still driven for this? Then you're high. Who's around you? Like a beehive creates sweet honey. What's creating sweet honey for your life? Like where? What group of people make it amazing? This is my hive over here that are eating burritos somewhere in pancakes at a burrito spot? Boron. Go Boron, California. Huh. Oh, dope sauce. Oh, it's over there. Okay. I love you, son. So what happens is you have like is the hive around you. Sometimes it's your family. And someone's going to be a coach. It's going to be a consultant. It's going to be a mastermind group you're part of. Like who's your hive? Because no matter how it is, like if you're around 5 millionaires, you'd be the sixth. If you're around 5 billionaires, you'd be the sixth. If you're around 5 joyous people, you'll be the sixth. If you're around 5 idiots, you'll be the sixth. So your circle matters, right? So find the hive that creates that place of where you fit, and then thrive for me is powerful. Once you get to a point of having amazing success, no care who you are. Like I've got to a point where I have great success, and I find that for me, the next level of joy like comes from me seeing my clients kill it. It's kind of like this concept of marginal utility. If you have 10 hamburgers and you eat like one, you feel good. Two feels good. Three hamburgers are like, I don't want another hamburger, but I want to feel good. But the next way you feel good is by giving more hamburgers out to people who are also starving. And so when you can thrive, you like look at that, like I have abundance. I want to thrive and give it to somebody. The circle starts again. Because now you have to see if I'm going to thrive, there's new challenges. What must I see that I'm not seeing right now to get me to the point of giving at a high level? Right? What do I have to accept, accept, discover, and the wheel starts spinning. It's a consistent process of growth. Because growth never ends. We're always looking at the levels. There's this quote that Harvey McKay says, and I love it. He says, the biggest room in the world is the room for improvement. Mm. I was like, ooh, that's a good one, because it never, never ends. And so that's why my wheel is designed that way. And that honestly is the root, the core, the foundation of the work I do. So if you guys like, how do I do this? How do I put it in the world? First step, go take the 6 drivers. Like, what are the 6 identity drivers I have? Where do I fit? And keep in mind, those also sit kind of like they swim in the aspect of like racial, social, and cultural norms of your country. Because like, for me, like there's certain things that happen in America that I couldn't do in the UK or I couldn't do in Chile. You know, like there's just a part of that. And like, if there's certain parts of your career you do that are racially driven in terms of like, I serve all black communities, right? That'd be one thing. Like that'd be a part of it. So realize that this identity you have, it doesn't just sit inside of different norms within your community, within your society, within your belief system, right? So make sure it fits where it has to fit. But then you got to get focused at a point of, I now know why I'm doing this hard work. I know what this hard work should look like because I did the work to do it. And the goal destination is to be what I call your CPO, your comprehensive peak operation. Because for me, what people will call work-life balance, like, I don't know if balance exists, like between my health. Well, not the moment, because I did a road trip and I've been eating a whole lot of chips and energy drinks. But at the moment, like for the most part, my health is where it should be. My family is where it should be. My business is operating well. I got a good spiritual sense of it. And like my moments are great. Like I made this moment happen. Like we were driving. This is literally the only town between like 30 miles that way, 30 miles that way. I'm like, we got to find this moment. So I'm hoping able to show up with my guys or Kevin Allen, because I don't want to drop them off. Like I don't want to be like, man, like leaving Paul short. Like these moments I've matched. I could have easily said, hey man, I don't know. Like, and they would have been like, sucks, but okay, right? But that's not how I operate. Like a master moment. And so when you operate that tier, it's no longer you trying to do the things that successful person does. That's overwhelming, but you now become the person who does those things. So that's my spiel for you guys tonight.
My goodness.
If you have any questions, let me know.
Anthony, that was fire. Thank you so much for that.
You made that really easy for us. We just got to sit here and pay attention. That's good. Very easy.
I do, man. All right. I can't have people on stage with me, so when I talk.
That's true. All right, ladies and gents, who has questions for Anthony? You can either put them in the chat box, or you can raise your hand, and Tiff and or Amy will pick on you to ask.
Anthony, I took 8 pages of notes. 8 pages.
Good. I have no notes.
That was a fire cycle. We've done a lot of that without knowing it.
Yeah.
It's a fire hose. Anybody successful has done this. Anybody who is in a place of success has had an identity shift. It just has happened. If you look at any of the track, it's always there. The problem is a lot of people just don't know and they go the long route. That's usually what takes place. I just have to figure out the process of shortening it. I saw a question come up.
Yes, Aaron would love to know the story of your first speaking engagement.
So I've had a few and some of them have been really, really bad. My first real speaking engagement, because you go talk to kids and stuff, that's not a real one. But I got booked by this organization to go to give a speech at a college somewhere, like Middle Wyoming. I don't know what it was. It was KP something was a company out of LA. And so I went out there and it's one of those moments where, like, first off, they didn't market it very well. So like I had like three people show up, which is really weird for a college, like a full auditorium with like these three kids. And I bombed it. You just bomb it because you're like, I had this, I could talk like this, but when you give a speech, the problem is like, what do I say to not waste their time and what's the structure and how do I make sure that I say the right things and I want to get a standing ovation, but how does that work? And oh man, like then you start stumbling over words and do I need to have slides or not have slides? I've forgotten. And like in the middle of my speech, my things. And I'm like, I forget it. You know, like I've had some bad ones. Like that first one was one of those ones where when I got back, I knew it was bad because they had called my agent and been like, hey, in the nice ways, like he sucked pretty much. So she's like, hey, I can't send you out. If this is what's going on, figure it out. And so I went and I watched the film and I asked questions of people and I got some insight of what to do and how to memorize things. And so I same thing. It was a 10 and it sucked. But I went and made it a 9 and then an 8. And I was like down to a 0. And now that's my second happy spot. Number one's right here with these people. Number two's on the stage.
My goodness. And when we saw you speak, like you, I think you were probably the best speaker. Like you got a standing ovation in the middle of your speech.
We walked away going, holy crap. We were with you, at In-N-Out Burger the night before. And you were like, Alan, are those your dirty undies in the back? I'm like, yeah, that's my bad. That's my bad.
Yes, they were.
And then the next day, it's 9 a.m. and we're like crying with a standing ovation with Anthony and 2,300 people. It's crazy.
All right. So Emily wanted to know, what are the 6 identity drivers, I believe was the question.
Yeah, the same one. So it's the Venn diagram. It's beliefs, thoughts, actions, mindset, habits, ego/pride. Ego, I say /pride because at the end of the day, everybody thinks their ego is a bad thing. And it's common people think, oh, ego is negative. But the ego is the part of me that has me here right now. My ego is like, you're the guy who shows up and stays consistent with his words no matter what takes place. So my ego shows up and makes sure I'm here. My ego made me lift weights and eat food and train for football. My ego makes me show up for my kids when I got to show up for my kids. So ego just protects the identity you have with the actions you have. So for me, I say ego and pride because the pride is a positive thing. It's like, I'm proud that this is who I am. I'm proud that I look at myself in the mirror because of what actions I take to protect the identity I've created for myself every single day. So that's why that's the last driver portion. It's hard to program that. That's more the one that's a byproduct of everything else. But those are the 6 core drivers.
Boom. All right. AK had a question. Tiff, can you hammer that for us?
Yeah. So AK said, do you think you will go through another identity shift in your life?
Oh, hell yeah. Multiple more. I don't think that. So literally like the room for me is to grow. And I always have these bigger dreams. So I guess at one point I want to be hosting a television show and something that's syndicated across America. I don't know what, I don't know when, but I talk to producers every now and then, like they love kind of who I am and what I do, which is honestly a phenomenal honor and testament to me. But I don't know what it looks like. Here's what I do know though, is right now I'm in season of dad. I got a 15-year-old, I got 10-year-old twins, and I'm doing nothing to pull me away from them in any way that'll have me like chasing some dream for myself that leaves me missing out on their dream of having a great dad. So I just do what I do. But yeah, I will have multiple. It'll be a shift when my first son goes to college in 2 years. It'll be a shift when my other kids go to college. It'll be a shift when my wife closes one of her businesses and starts another one she started in here pretty soon. It'll be a shift when I decide to really push out and do more with this business. It'll be a shift for TV stuff. At one point, I want to act in a TV, like a movie. I don't know what movie. And maybe it's like a movie I make. Not one of those dirty ones, but like Avatar 3. But I want to be an actor in a movie. I have these dreams to do stuff. Like at the core, if you guys haven't got this yet, my sole thing is to reach my full potential and help others do the same. Like my mom passed away when I was 30. And it was weird because I wasn't in a great place. And I realized one of the big catalysts was like her physical body failed her. She could not reach her full potential. And so for me, it's been this anchor of like, I'm different. I am statistically, any prison in America, 75% of the inmates are former foster kids. 50% of our homeless population are former foster kids like me. Less than 1% will graduate college. 1 in 16,000 high school football players will ever play in the NFL. And like 90-something% of business, that 99 failed in the first 10 years, and I sold mine after 10 years, right? So I have these ridiculously stupid odds in my life. And so for me, I'm like, I have got to keep pushing to see what else there is. And I want to drag every other swinging soul around me to do the same. Because there's so much joy in the bonus rounds. Like, we've all accomplished some cool things, and a lot of us like in bonus rounds. Like, you weren't supposed to do the thing you're doing, but now you're doing it. It's like Donkey Kong. Like, now I'm in the bonus round. And I'm trying to see how many damn Sonic rings that I can get, mushrooms I can get, like Mario. And so for me, like, the big thing is I will always chip. I want to. It's the only way you get that next level of great, right? So I'm desiring to see what that next tier is. So, yes, I will proactively seek new identity shifts. But the thing is, once you get a handle on how to do it, it's not scary anymore. Like, it's, I think it's the thing is, we fear the things that, like, if there's like a dark room and unknown inside, a lot of unknown stuff in there. We always see the monster, but we don't realize the treasure behind the monster. I go in the room with a sword of past successes to kind of slay the monsters. That's how I find my next level of joy.
Powerful.
Taryn asked, what did she ask, Tiff? What advice do you have to a dad or as a dad to help? I don't remember it. Sorry, Tara.
It says, what advice do you have as a dad to teach your kids this powerful mindset?
Fire. Great question.
You punch them in the face every day. Bah! No. no, they can't even hear. But my this mindset is, I put them in moments. I do not rob them of their hardships. I purposely make their life difficult when I can. Like, I love them. I mean, I love them to death. If they get a problem, I want them to figure it out and come to me after and say, Dad, look what I've done. How could I have done it? I'll give them the insight and I nudge them out of the bird's nest. Because when they turn 18, man, I'm not going to be there around anymore. I got to have faith that I can sleep at night knowing they're prepared. And so I put them in situations to test their kind of mettle. And then when it's weak, man, I help weld it back together with words.
Fire. Powerful. What else we got, Tiff?
So we have from Cynthia, what's your workout / health routine like today?
Oh, today? Right this moment? Well, right now,
In-N-Out
it's
burger.
In the car and eat food. During quarantine, it's been Peloton bike and X3 bar. Prior to that, it's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. My son get up in the morning at 5:30, go to the gym, and we hit Monday, Wednesday, and Friday all upper body. And so we'll do like five. I think we get there like at 6:45-ish. We're there until like 6:35, come home, take a shower. Like, that's my strength. And then I would do CrossFit lower body Tuesday, Thursday in between. So 5 days a week I was getting it in. That's essentially the routine, yeah. I mean, I don't have like sets and reps I can give you, which we could, but I pretty much just do Monday, Wednesday, Friday upper, Tuesday, Thursday's lower, and I ride the bike, jog, and a treadmill in between.
Right on. All right, so we got a couple more questions. We got 5 minutes. Can we do a lightning round of questions here?
Yeah, lightning round. Lightning round. All right, my wife's over here like, you better hurry up.
we'll have you off on time. Tiff, can you hammer the all questions?
Right. Yep. So Aaron wants to know, who are your mentors / people you follow most closely today?
Oh, man, I got a lot of good colleagues, which are oddly now friends. So guys like Brendan, which you've referenced a few times, Dean and Lewis and Trent and Jay Shetty and Prince Ye, cool minds that do awesome stuff. God, I've recently met John Gordon, which is a really cool dude. And then Todd Herman, really good guy. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I look up to, and I don't look at them because of their success, but how they operate as men and women in the world. And so those are kind of some of the people that now I look at them like, man, I respect what they're doing and how they're doing it. Mm.
Powerful.
Okay, Cody wants to know, what are some of your favorite books?
One of the first ones I love was Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's a really good first book for me to read. I just got done on this trip. I have read Essentialism, Good to Great, and The Big Leap. And Essentialism is a really good one when you're trying to get to the clarity, like what's the most important, the simplest thing to do. Good to Great's really good for building a big business, but The Big Leap is really a good one. We're trying to figure out, how do I get past the upper limits?
Fire.
Okay, and then Jacob wants to know, what's your advice for a college student working and doing schoolwork at the same time?
Do more than what everybody else is complaining about. Everyone else is going to say like, oh, it's hard, it's long days, and it's difficult. You got to make that stuff so simple that normally if you can get an extra 2 or 3 hours of work in the day, of learning, of reading, of whatever needs to be done. Are you guys linking my burrito here? Yeah. So that at one point it becomes super easy for you to do the hard work that everybody else isn't doing. It'll give you leaps and bounds ahead. I'm going to scarf a burrito here before we get out of here. All right, I do got to go. Look at this burrito. I'm about to smash. Oh, it's about to go down.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
We'll be hammering after this. Is that it for questions?
Yeah, that was the last one.
Okay. Right on. Cool. Anthony, thank you so much, man. Thank you for taking the time out of your road trip, and we appreciate you more than you know, and you are a shining example of what Alan and I one day hope to become, and we're always working towards that. So we are unreasonably grateful for you, my friend.
Hey, very welcome. Thank you for having me on. All you guys, thank you for coming to spend time with me and my burrito and my family. If you guys need anything, they'll say I'm coming.
Anthony, make sure you thank your family for us for giving us the time. Thank you so much. And also, I'm digging the beard. This is longer than usual.
Like that?
Oh, not bad.
Sexy, bro.
Not bad.
Got gray hairs in it.
All right. Take care, man. Thank you, man. You so much.
Appreciate it. Kevin. No problem.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Alan.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much, Aaron. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for doing mute, too. You guys are the best. You made it super easy for us, so we appreciate you guys.
Fire. Thank you all. Please reach out on social media if you have any more questions, and thank you all for joining. Talk soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, it would mean the world to us if you would share this with your friends.
And if you have any questions, please reach out to Kevin or myself. Our contact information is in the show notes, and we can't wait to hear from you.
Guys, we wouldn't be able to do this without you, so if you would kindly leave us a review on iTunes, that would help us make more people hyper-conscious.